And in the studio talking with Bert Dalton, who is a composer, jazz piano, arranger, engineer. And what else do you do, Bert? How are you doing?
A gadabout. That's pretty much most of it there, I'd say.
Okay. And you are originally from Chicago.
Originally from Chicago, yeah.
Right.
I grew up out in the suburbs and got my butt kicked down there in Rush Street. It was a really incredible education, I'll tell you.
You did literally get your butt kicked, or did you? I mean, what's
No, I say that jokingly. You know, the musical standard in Chicago is really high, mm-hmm. and of course, growing up there, I just assumed it was that way everywhere. And yet, I also sensed a real camaraderie among the great players in Chicago. That if they sensed you had some ability, you would get corrected, but it was in the spirit of
it was with love.
Yeah.
It was love taps.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Like, you know, if they call a tune and what do you mean you don't know that tune? Go home and learn it. And you would, because you didn't want to get embarrassed again.
Mm-hmm. I hear you.
So it was a really great standard to aspire to growing up in that town.
So that's where jazz happened for you initially, I would assume.
Yeah. I was real fortunate. I grew up in a very nice, peaceful suburban town that was, you know, outside of the craziness of the city. But of course, there was always that lure that, you know, that's where it was happening.
What city was that?
A little suburb called Villa Park. It's out in about 20 miles west of the Loop. And, you know, it was great out there, good schools. And, you know, we had a good music program at school. My brother was a bass player and 2 years ahead of me. So I was wanting to be like my brother. And
is he still playing?
He is. He is. As a matter of fact, we did a concert last year with a symphony orchestra in Dallas. We did a little trio thing and got a chance to use my brother. And we play, usually every year, we play a jazz festival in La Crosse called the Great River Jazz Festival. So we call that group the Dalton Brothers Trio. And
So tell me, how you got first involved with jazz? What was it that, I mean, why not like rock and roll or whatever else?
Yeah, know? it was pretty weird. When I was a kid, all my friends were into what was happening, what was on the radio, and somehow that just didn't grab me. Probably the first jazz musician that I heard, and I must have been, I don't know, 10, 11 years old, was Ramsey Lewis. Mm-hmm. And I had been taking piano lessons for a while and dinking around. And there was a moment I was listening to, I think it was Wade in the Water he was doing. And I noticed that he was going back and forth between two chords. And it was just, it was grooving so hard and it was so happening and he was making things up. And I remember that moment when I was playing with my brother and a cousin who was a drummer. We were playing that tune and I just realized that I could experiment and I could play notes that weren't on the page. And it was like this light went off. And I said, gee, I like this world. I'd like to explore it a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd say Ramsey was kind of the first jazz musician that I listened to. And then the next one that sort of blew the gates wide open for me was Oscar Peterson.
Okay.
When I first heard him, and I just thought, wow, that's impossible what that guy's doing. I'd like to try to do a little bit of it. You know, not only his musicianship, but I was really struck by his sense of swing. And I think that's probably what attracted me right from the get-go, as you know, I really wanted to swing. And then what totally ruined my life, I was about maybe 16 years old. I'd just gotten my driver's license. The next town over is Elmhurst, which is the home of Elmhurst College and also the executive offices for Downbeat magazine. They're there now. And I saw that there was a Midwest Jazz Band Festival. And I said, well, I'm going to go check this out. Well, this was one of these things where all of these great Midwestern, the big university jazz ensembles came and went head to head. It was kind of like a big football championship. You know, they were all trying to outplay each other. And I was so blown away that caused me to pick the school that I went to, Northern Illinois, just because I just wanted to play in that band. Mm-hmm. That's what it was all about for me.
That's cool.
And it really turned out to be a great choice. They've got a stellar music program, which continues to this day. It was started by Ron Modell, who is retired now, still around. Wonderful, wonderful trumpet player from which I learned so much. He ran a great band And his band was not as much about competition, but we're going to read a lot of different styles. We're going to play a lot of different kind of music. But the main thing is we're going to have a band that swings. And that was a great band, a great brass section.
So he was one of your kind of influences, one of your
mentors,
I guess, in some way, I would say.
Yeah, absolutely. And then I was so fortunate. I had the greatest piano teacher in the world, a guy named J.B. Floyd, Dr. Floyd, who has since moved on. He's now head of piano studies at University of Miami. An authority on Charles Ives, very much into – and, of course, we're talking – I'm a really old guy. This was like early 70s, and he was a friend of Buchla and Moog and all of those guys who were pioneers in the synthesizer world. And to me at that point, I didn't really connect with that, but I love the way that JB played. I mean, he was such a great jazz player, and then he'd play Rachmaninoff and make you cry. And he was the one who really, as a college freshman, basically he said, everything you've been doing up until now, you're going to forget it, and we're going to build your technique from ground zero. And he totally changed my approach to playing and is really – I mean, I can't tell you how much that helped, just being able to learn to play the right way without having to work so hard at it.
Well, this is – it's interesting how people pick a certain instrument or what happens, why that happens. And I'm kind of wondering why it was piano for you and bass for your brother and why wasn't it, the guitar or the – I don't know, xylophone, whatever.
Yeah, that's a great question. I guess, I don't know, I think it's harmony that really got to me at first, I mean, I can remember being 6, 7 years old and hanging out in the Sunday school room at church and finding triads on the piano. I mean, I vividly remember that and saying, wow, you can play notes at the same time and they sound cool together. So I think it was probably harmony that drew me to the instrument and the fact that, I don't know, I'm so prejudiced. It's got, aside from electronic instruments, it's got the greatest range. It fits in any style. It's such a versatile instrument. And fortunately for me, it's an instrument on which one can make a living.
Yeah. So there's another part of it, too. There's another part of it for my observation that there's a passion that's involved.
Absolutely.
And you talked about the creative, the idea that jazz was different than what you were playing before, which actually, let me ask you that first. I mean, as a kid, starting the piano, what were you playing?
The usual dinky stuff that kids learn.
Chopsticks.
and I was incorrigible. I didn't want to practice, but I liked fooling around on the piano, So, and that was sort of my path. Even when I got into college, I did the hand and the charity studies and stuff like that. That didn't really strike my passion. Classical music, I have a great respect for it and for those who study it. But what I really wanted to do was to, find new paths and, create new things that, that go together.
Yeah. Okay. So in that case, what jazz is more of a passionate thing is what I'm hearing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And so what is it about that? Have you ever thought about why it commands your attention so much?
Yeah, only for the last 40 years or so have I thought about that. To me, it's a platform for great self-expression. It incorporates both sides of the brain. It incorporates the intellectual, the emotional, the technical. To me, there's just a whole experience there. And those very elusive moments when everything comes together, when, you're really in synchronicity with the other musicians that you're playing with, when the ideas are flowing. Without getting too mystical or philosophical.
Get mystical and philosophical.
Okay, all right. Obviously, the creative juices come from outside of us and not within us. And, we can sit here and debate that for hours of what that really means. But when we get in that place where we get ourselves out of the way, where you get the ego out of the way, and you're just listening to music that is already in the universe and just merely expressing that through your instrument, the audience certainly becomes a part of that. And, you know, we as musicians are just fortunate enough that we happen to be the ones that are playing the music. But, you know, when those moments happen, I mean, to me, that's about as good as it gets.
Yeah, that's actually part of what I wanted to ask you, too, that there are moments when I watch musicians playing. There's moments when I listen to musicians playing, whether or not it's live or on a record, when and I don't know whether or not this happens with other types of music. It happens for me with jazz, where you all of a sudden hear everybody. It's almost like this lockstep dance that happens.
It's amazing. Almost
feel the passion. You can feel this, like we're all of a sudden one mind.
It's true.
It may only happen for like one moment during a song, or may happen during the entire song. But I've always wondered what that feels like.
It's pretty cool. It's pretty cool. That's what we strive for. I mean, that's why we rehearse and try to get the technique under our fingers and you know, impress in our memory the form of where we're going. So we all know what the roadmap is, so that we can actually step beyond that. You know, and you know, listening to music, you listen to the greats and how they have found their paths that weave through those things. You know, I mean, the stellar melodic paths that, you know, Coltrane took us on, that Byrd took us on, and, you know, the harmonies that Bill Evans found. And, you know, so we listen to those greats and we strive to, you know, we derive our inspiration from that. And yet the great thing about jazz is you don't necessarily want to play like somebody else. You know, I'll never play like Bill Evans. I'll never play like Oscar Peterson. And yet their ideas, their inspiration are certainly incorporated into what I want to do and to try to express the things that I feel at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
But you're absolutely right about locking it in. You know, I've always felt that, you know, the piano bass drums combination has always been my favorite. I've just always really loved that trio format. And, you know, and I've said that I feel that the piano bass drums trio is to jazz what the string quartet is to classical music. You're basically crystallizing everything down into the most essential elements. Without any one of them, you don't quite have the whole. And, boy, there's nothing a good trio can't do. There's nowhere a good trio can't go.
So tell me the first time you experienced that. I mean, you've played in trio settings. You've played in a lot of settings with a lot of people.
Yeah.
And well, maybe it was that time that you were playing with your brother and
yeah. Well, that light definitely went off there. Probably for me, the most the period I think where I probably developed the most was late 70s, early 80s. I was living in Lake Geneva, Wisconsin at the time. I had decided to take a semester off from college, and let's see, that's been about 40 years now. And we got a great trio gig. I've always really enjoyed having a trio workshop, which would be a steady gig of a couple of nights a week. In this case, we had three nights a week in this little joint in Lake Geneva, Wisconsin, and they had a grand piano. The bar seated maybe 40 people, and we were up there three nights a week. I was living there. The drummer was driving from Chicago. The bass player was driving from Elgin. So they had like over an hour each way to come to this gig. And I was doing a lot of transcribing in those days. I was transcribing, you know, Oscar and Brubeck and, all kinds of stuff. Things I still play today, Bobby Timmons tunes. And really, to me, that was a real education of really listening and studying and getting it down and then trying to create those sounds. And then as a group, exploring those things. And we actually had a really good run with that group. We added a vocalist, Elaine Hamilton, and the drummer who was older than me and far more experienced and a great visionary. He was a musical buddy of mine for 10 years, Neville Turner. He's since retired, and he's living back in Australia now where he was from. But he kind of lit a fire under me and said, yeah, we can do this. We can travel. We can do this. And doggone if we didn't. We put together a great trio with a vocalist and took that band to New Zealand.
Cool.
Went to Australia. We opened for Count Basie at Navy Pier, which is a night I'll never forget. And
nice.
Had a real good run with that group. And to me, that was really where it first started happening, mm-hmm. was having a good, well-oiled trio like that. And I thought, yeah, this is it.
Well, tell me a little more about that Navy Pier gig. And it sounded, you said that was very special, being with opening for Count Basie. But tell me a little more about that.
That was sort of an outgrowth of the, you know, we were kind of embedded in the Rush Street scene. That was where it was really happening in the early 80s. And there was a club owner, I recall, that we had worked for, one of his clubs. And he had put on a huge, it was a huge benefit. I think it was a lupus benefit that we did. And out at the end of Navy Pier, there's sort of this semicircular ballroom that looks out over Lake Michigan. And there were several different groups on there. And we really did have the great honor of being in the early part of the program, and we did our bit. The group was very well received. It was very tight. I got to say, we had some great arrangements, a really, really talented singer. Mm-hmm. And then after doing our bit and, you know, watching the chairman of the board take the stage, it was just, it was really a thrill, and it felt like, well, it kind of validated what we were doing.
Exactly, I can imagine.
Yeah, it was just great being a part of it.
That's cool. That's cool. So tell me a little bit more about where you've traveled and who you've played with.
Well, you know, for a lot of years, I was just part of groups that were well organized. The Chicago Jazz Exchange, we had that group together for about 8 years, and then the drummer and I stuck together. We wound up back in New Mexico and worked with another great bass player, John Belzegai, who was later part of the Latin Jazz group. And it really wasn't until later years when I started, you know, more freelancing that I had the opportunity to work with some greats. I had a chance to do a concert with Anita O'Day, which was fantastic. At some of the festivals, we've accompanied Herbie Mann and Bud Shank. Eddie Daniels, I had a chance to work with him. The names are going out of my head right mm-hmm. now. I'm sure I got a list on my resume somewhere, you know, and they'll come as
sure.
as we talk.
Sure, sure.
There's a wonderful, wonderful saxophonist in Australia by the name of Don Burrows, which a lot of Americans haven't heard from, but he was knighted by the Queen for his work in jazz education in Australia. And when we were in Sydney, we actually had the honor of playing in a jazz club that was named after him, the Don Burrows Supper Club. So that was a thrill. We got a chance to play with him.
Cool.
And more recently, Howard Alden has become a friend and comes and sits in with us. And he's just such a fabulous guitar player. And then a few years ago, I had the incredible privilege of recording with John Clayton and Jeff Hamilton, who have been heroes of mine for 30 years. And boy, that was a music lesson, getting in the studio with those cats.
That's cool. That's
great. Talk about lovingly getting your butt kicked. It was just super.